Canis had been creeping toward a complete metamorphosis since his fight with Rumpelstiltskin in the tunnels beneath the town several months ago. Nothing he had done since had slowed his change. Still, she knew it was best to keep her doubts to herself. Our future selves believed we could change things, and we already have a little.
"Do you know when it happens to me?" the old man asked.
The girls shook their heads. They should have asked when they had the chance, but there were so many other questions that had gone unanswered, too.
"Perhaps if I altered course, I could stop it," Canis said. "That's what you're trying to do, correct?"
"We know we've changed a few things," Sabrina said, "though we have no idea if it has made a difference in the future."
Canis got up from his chair. He repeated Granny Relda's advice about getting some rest, and then slowly climbed the steps to his room.
"Are we going to lose him?" Daphne whispered.
"I don't know," Sabrina said.
After a few moments of silence, the girls went up to their room. Elvis padded along beside them and hopped up onto their bed.
"I guess we better get some rest," Daphne said, shutting off the light.
"I've got a bad feeling," Sabrina said.
"About tonight?"
"No, about the future. About this case.
We still haven't found the missing items, and it seems like things keep popping up to get in the way. What if we can't figure out who the thief is? What if we don't solve this mystery? What if there are things we can't change?"
The girls slipped their hands together and lay quietly. The darkness was like a heavy weight on their chests. Sabrina awoke to an incredible shaking. Her head felt like it was going to bounce off her shoulders. The bed seemed to be moving around the room on its own. She looked over at her sister. Daphne had her eyes closed, concentrating hard. She also had the magic detector in her hand, and it was vibrating.
"Ugh, I think I'm going to be sick," Daphne said, squirming around the bed like someone had tossed a handful of worms down her pants.
"What's going on?"
Sabrina asked, doing her best to keep the bed from careening into her father's desk.
"I feel like one of those time tears is about to open up again. Oh, my legs feel like pudding."
"Where is it going to happen? Can you tell?"
"There's going to be one in the river. It's going to be a big one, too."
"Big enough for Wilhelm's ship?
Mucho big-o."
The shimmering and shaking stopped, and Daphne shook her arms out as if they had fallen asleep.
"We have to go, now!"
Sabrina glanced over at the alarm clock on the night table by the bed.
"It's only 10 o'clock. We can't go now. What about Uncle Jake? We don't know if he's found Baba Yaga yet."
"This could be the only chance we get to send Wilhelm back," Daphne said, as she put the magic detector into her pants pocket.
The girls leaped out of bed and raced into their grandmother's room. Granny Relda was still resting, and they had to shake her from her nap.
"Lieblings, for heaven's sake," Granny Relda cried as she sat up in bed.
"There's a time tear opening in the river soon. We need to go, now."
"A time what?"
the old woman said.
"A hole in time," Sabrina explained, "just like the one Wilhelm came through to get here. We need to get him back on the boat so they can sail into it and get back to where they belong, but it has to happen soon."
"How do you know all this?"
"Granny, you keep secrets from us sometimes to protect us, right?" Daphne asked.
The old woman nodded.
"Well, this is our secret, and you're just going to have to trust us like we trust you."
Granny laughed.
"But girls, you never trust me."
"Fine, then trust us like we're supposed to trust you," Sabrina said, pulling her grandmother out of bed and down the hallway.
Meanwhile, Daphne pounded on Puck's door. The fairy joined them shortly, strapped with enough of his glop grenades to fight a war, and everyone rushed downstairs where Canis was sitting on the couch.
"We have to,"
Granny started, but Mr. Canis held up his hand.
"I heard," he replied. "The car is already warmed up."
"What about Jacob?" Charming said, as he poked his head out of his mirror.
"He's only been gone an hour, and there's no way to reach him," Granny Relda said. "We're going to have to try something else."
Charming disappeared into his mirror, and moments later returned, leading a brilliant white stallion out of the reflection.
Even Canis, who was rarely surprised by anything, was stunned. Elvis looked up at the horse as if he were in the presence of royalty.
"I'll go for Jacob," the prince said as he led the horse outside. The rest of the group followed him. He mounted the creature and raced off into the night.
Daphne looked over at her grandmother with a smile. "Remember when you told me I couldn't have a pony because we didn't have enough room?"
Granny shook her head.
"Not a chance."
Mr. Canis drove faster than he ever had. He whipped the old jalopy through the empty back roads, over the wooden bridges, and across the abandoned train tracks, like he was an international race car driver. Sabrina was happy he understood the urgency of their plan, but it was times like this she wished the car had more modern safety features. She tightened the ropes that the family had installed as makeshift seat belts around her waist. Even the usually fearless Puck put his on. When they got to the town, Canis parked the car across from the police station, and everyone got out.
"Puck, go ahead and take your position," Granny said.
Puck's wings spread out and flapped vigorously, lifting him into the air.
"I'll wait for you at the dock," he said,
and then zipped off toward the river. Canis nodded.
"What next?"
"Unfortunately, this plan of ours was somewhat dependent upon Jacob," Granny said. "We need to give Charming some time to find him and Baba Yaga."
"We can't wait another second," Daphne said, as she pointed to the sky.
The stars seemed to have been devoured by a swirling black mass hovering high over the town. It was bigger and uglier than any Sabrina had seen before.
"We've got to do this now, Granny."
"All right," their grandmother said. "I suppose we can sneak around the back and knock a hole in the wall. At least that much of the plan could still work."
"No, stop," Mr. Canis said, sniffing the air. "There are men stationed on the top of the building, and a large group of them at the back."
"How many do you think?" Granny said.
"I smell 50 of them, maybe more."
"They knew we were coming," Sabrina said, spotting one of the playing card soldiers peering over the edge of the jailhouse roof.
She also saw the deadly broadsword he held in his hands.
"I can take a few of them," Canis said, "but the three of you should wait here."
"Old friend, you'll never get past them all. This isn't going to work," the old woman sighed.
"Then what?"
"Then we go right through the front door," Sabrina said.
The family turned to her.
"Remember our escape training?" Sabrina said.
"Puck knew we would head for the woods, so he didn't bother to guard the path. I bet you $1,000,000 Nottingham thinks the same way. He would never suspect us coming through the front door. I bet the inside isn't guarded at all."
Her family and friends looked at her for a long time. Their faces were filled with doubt. But suddenly, Mr. Canis started across the street.
"Let's do it."
"What's the plan?"
Granny asked, as the rest of the family hurried to catch up to Canis.
"Mr. Canis can just run through and make us a path to the cell. We'll follow him."
"There's going to be a lot of dust, so stay close," the old man said.
And then he bolted right through the front door. His face may have appeared old and frail, but he slammed through the offices like a powerful wrecking machine, plowing through walls, overturning desks, and making his own path to the jail cells at the back of the building. The women followed the best they could, dodging falling plaster and broken electrical lines. They held their faces under their shirts to filter out some of the debris. The blitz made a tremendous racket and would surely attract the attention of the guards outside, but Sabrina was right. Nottingham hadn't bothered to fortify the inside of the jail. In no time, the group had reached the back of the building. There they found Wilhelm locked inside a small cell. The poor man was terrified by what he had heard coming toward him. He leaped from his chair, lifted it, and waved it threateningly at the group.
"Zurück bleiben!
Ich möchte Sie nicht verletzen!"
Wilhelm shouted.
"What did he say?"
Sabrina asked.
"He's frightened. He thinks we've come to hurt him,"
Granny explained, then turned to the man.
"Wilhelm, it's us! We've come to rescue you!"
"Rescue?" Wilhelm cried. He set his chair down on the ground and shook his jail cell bars as if to remind them of their next obstacle. Canis reached for the bars. Using his incredible strength, he bent them apart, wrestling with them until there was an opening big enough for Wilhelm to step through. Just then Sabrina heard Nottingham's angry voice. "The prisoner is escaping, you fools!" he shouted. His furious bellowing was drowned out by the approaching feet of what sounded like 4 dozen guards. "We've got to get out of here, now!" Granny said. Canis stepped to the back wall, pulled back his fist, and slammed it into the concrete. It crumbled, shaking the rafters. A few cinder blocks completely collapsed, exposing the outside, and freedom to the group. One more thump sent a spray of concrete and soot all over the room, but when the dust settled, there was a hole, big enough for a 7-foot, 300-pound man to step through. "Everyone out!" Granny cried, as she helped Sabrina and Daphne through the hole. Wilhelm and the old woman followed. Before Mr. Canis could get through, Sabrina heard a sinister voice from inside the station. "You do realize that breaking a prisoner out of jail is a big no-no," Nottingham said, and then she heard Mr. Canis roar in pain. The dust billowing out of the hole prevented her from seeing what was happening, but she knew he had been hurt badly. A moment later, Nottingham's ugly form stepped through the hole. "I really should arrest you, Grimms, but I have a better way of solving our problem," he said as he reached for the crossbow strapped to his back. He loaded it with a steel arrow and leveled it at Wilhelm's chest. "One shot changes everything in this town, and though I know the throngs of people eager to see Wilhelm swing from the gallows will be disappointed, having their freedom will more than make up for missing the show." And then he pulled the trigger. Chapter 10. It seemed to Sabrina that the arrow sailed across space in slow motion. She wondered what it would be like to suddenly not exist. Would they just blink into nothing, or would it feel like dying? But the arrow never reached its target. Instead, there was a loud, quaking thump, which knocked everyone to the ground. As they scampered to their feet and realized Wilhelm was unharmed, they were confronted by the source of the thump. Baba Yaga had arrived in her horrifying house. The old crone was leaning out of her window with a glowing ball in her hand. It lit up like a firecracker, and a blast of red energy hit Nottingham in the chest as he turned to face the witch.
"I want my wand!" she shouted.
The witch's magic tossed Nottingham several yards and slammed him onto the ground, but a second later he still had the presence of mind to scamper behind a tree.
"I don't know what you're talking about!"
The monstrous house raced toward him. One of its legs snatched the tree out of the ground, roots and all, leaving the sheriff vulnerable and panicked. Wilhelm seemed quite disturbed by what he was seeing. He cried out something in German, but his message was clear. Sabrina's great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was completely freaked out.
"Baba Yaga's not going to be fooled for very long," Charming said as he rode up on his stallion. Uncle Jake was right behind him, hovering on a flying carpet.
"He's right. We should go."
Daphne nodded.
"I agree. That storm is coming mucho fasto."
"We can't leave! Mr. Canis is still in there!"
Sabrina said. Just then the old man stepped through the hole. He held his hand to his left eye as blood seeped down his wrist.
"Old friend!" Granny gasped.
"It is nothing," the old man said, but his voice was pained.
Granny removed a handkerchief from her handbag and gave it to the old man. He held it to his wound and then ushered everyone around the building to the street.
"We have to get to the boat!"
The family raced the 3 blocks to the town marina. There they found Puck waiting impatiently.
"It's about time," Puck said. "I'm dying of hunger."
"Is the boat ready?"
the old woman asked.
"Naturally," Puck replied, as he gestured to Wilhelm's tiny rowboat.
Uncle Jake helped Granny Relda into it, then the girls, Wilhelm, and finally himself.
You know what to do?
Uncle Jake asked the ferry boy.
No sweat! This is going to be simple!
Puck crowed as he shot into the sky. He had barely gotten aloft when he was nearly knocked out of the sky by a cannonball.
They're shooting at us! Daphne exclaimed.
Uncle Jake took the oars and rowed with all his might. They streaked across the river right toward the ship, while more cannon shots slammed into the water around them.
They must think they're coming to attack,
Granny said. Wilhelm leaped from his seat and waved at the boat. His excitement nearly capsized them, and Sabrina had to brace herself to keep from falling in the river. His wild gestures made her nervous. It seemed like he was just making them an easier target. There were two more shots, but then the explosions stopped altogether, giving them smooth sailing to the side of the ship. Uncle Jake and Wilhelm helped Granny aboard, and then the girls scampered up on their own power. Once aboard, Sabrina was stunned by the people who surrounded her. Nearly everyone she had ever met from the town was there. Briar Rose, Mr. Seven, and the rest of the Seven Dwarfs. Ms. White, Beauty, and her husband, the Beast, and even some old enemies like Jack the Giant Killer and Rumpelstiltskin. She stepped in front of her family and clenched her fists, prepared to fight their way off the ship. But then it dawned on her that no one knew who they were. Wilhelm said something in German that seemed to calm the nerves of the passengers.
What did he say?
Sabrina asked.
He said that he is okay, but there has been an odd turn of events,
Granny explained. Then she turned to the rest of the crowd.
I know many of you are confused. You set sail for America expecting to find a relatively unsettled plot of land. Well, you found America. You just didn't show up at the right time.
What are you talking about, old woman?
Beast growled.
And who are you?
My name is Relda Grimm, and the town you see before you is Ferryport Landing. It's your home, or at least it will be. You've slipped through a tear in time. You're more than 200 years in the future.
Several people cried out in shock, while others rushed to the sides of the ship to gawk out at the little town.
Wilhelm was taken against his will, but we have returned him, Granny continued. Did you say your name is Grimm?
Snow White asked, as she stepped from the crowd. She was as beautiful as ever.
Yes, Granny replied. This is my son, Jacob, and my granddaughters, Sabrina and Daphne.
The ever-afters on the boat roared with approval.
Our savior's family lives on,
a woman said from the back of the crowd. Sabrina peered back and was stunned to find it was the Queen of Hearts cheering for her.
Times sure have changed, she grumbled.
Are we friends?
Ms. White asked the family.
Granny smiled. You're one of our best friends, Snow. I wish that I could explain more, but there is no time. We have to get you back where you belong.
Suddenly, Daphne began to vibrate again.
That will be any minute now, the little girl said.
We need to get off this boat, unless we want to join them in the past, Sabrina added.
Now, Puck said, as he buzzed the boat. Do I do it now?
Just a moment, Puck, Granny said,
then turned back to the passengers.
It was a pleasure to meet you all, but we really must go.
Uncle Jacob took Briar Rose by the hand.
I'll see you in 200 years.
The beautiful princess looked confused, but gave him one of her goofy smiles. Uncle Jake led Granny back to the side of the ship and did his best to help her down. It wasn't as easy as climbing aboard.
Let my friends help you, Cinderella said.
She took 3 small brown mice from her pocket and set them on the ground. Sabrina watched as they morphed into full-grown men, and once the change was complete, she immediately recognized them. They were Malcolm, Alexander, and Bradford, the men who worked on her radio show. They helped the family off the ship and down into the rowboat.
Now?
Puck said impatiently.
Now!
Uncle Jake cried, once they were safely rowing back toward the shore. Sabrina watched as Puck pulled the pins on his glop grenades and launched them onto the deck of the ship. They exploded,
but not in a wave of disgusting filth like usual. These grenades were filled with a soft pink dust that covered the passengers. Sabrina recognized it as forgetful dust, and though she knew it was necessary to wipe the memories of everyone on the new beginning so that history couldn't be altered, she still regretted the opportunity they were giving up. They had a chance to change some of the things that made life in Ferryport Landing so hard. Maybe they could have stopped the uprising that led to the barrier's construction. Maybe they could have changed the hatred so many of the ever-afters felt for the Grimms. The possibilities were endless. She watched as the passengers stood on the sides of the boat, glassy-eyed. The Beast and his wife, the Frog Prince, Little Bo Peep, Morgan Le Fay, Cinderella and her mice assistants looked back at them, and then the ship was gone, swirling into the nothingness of the storm that hovered above. But in its wake, Sabrina finally understood who had stolen the magical items.
"I just solved the case!" she shouted, leaping up from her seat.
She was so excited she fell overboard into the cold water. Uncle Jake snatched her by the sleeve and pulled her back into the boat.
"Sabrina, are you okay?" "I've solved the mystery," she said as she wiped water out of her eyes. "I know who stole the magic items. It was Cinderella." "I don't believe it," Daphne gasped.
She came to her house with her husband, Tom. She must have brought her mice friends, and they snuck into the witch's bags, Sabrina said in a rush. "That's how they got into everyone's homes. They went as mice and turned into men to steal the objects. You saw them on the boat. They can shapeshift." "That explains the locker at Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus's office," Daphne added. "She must have stuck her bag inside and trapped one of them in there. He turned into a man and was able to kick the door open from the inside."
"But why? Why would Dr. Cindy need to steal this stuff?"
Uncle Jake asked as he rowed the little boat to shore.
"You heard her husband. The radio show is going national. They're going to be rich. They don't need to steal anything."
"I say we ask Dr. Cindy ourselves," Granny Relda said as they reached the dock.
Mr. Canis was there, waiting to help everyone back onto shore. His handkerchief was stained through with blood from his eye injury.
"Baba Yaga has nearly demolished the police station," Mr. Canis informed them. "It won't be long before she moves on to her next target."
"Not too very old friend," Granny said, as Uncle Jake helped her out of the boat. "I think we know who has her wand."
The family rushed down the street to the radio station. On top of the building was a huge metal tower with a red light, and above that there was another of the frightening time storms. They pushed through the doors of WFPR and headed for the stairs, where a sign read, "Studio, third floor." But before they reached the first step, they were stopped in their tracks by a huge security guard.
"Can I help you?" he said, though his tone sounded not at all helpful.
"We need to talk to Dr. Cindy," Granny Relda explained.
"Well, she's on the air right now, so I suggest you give her a call."
"You don't understand," Sabrina said. "She's doing something very dangerous."
"Like listening to callers whine about their miserable lives?" the security guard said sarcastically.
He reached down and turned a knob on a radio. Dr. Cindy was indeed on the air, trying to help a woman understand that she would never find happiness in food.
"Now, like I said, she's busy," the security guard said roughly.
He opened the door and ushered everyone back outside.
"Something's going on up there," Daphne said. "I can feel it."
The magic detector was nearly bouncing out of her hand.
"Maybe Mr. Canis could eat the guard," Puck said.
Canis shrugged, as if that wasn't such a bad idea.
"I don't think we need to eat anyone," Sabrina said, turning to Puck and studying the arsenal of glop grenades he had strapped to his chest. "Got any of those with real glop in them?"
Puck smiled. Uncle Jake propped the door open just a crack. Puck pulled the pin on a grenade, and Sabrina tossed it inside. A second later, there was a loud splat, and the security guard came running outside, covered in a funky-smelling goo.
I'm going to be sick, he cried, rolling around on the ground.
With the guard incapacitated, the family rushed back inside the station and hurried up the steps. Moments later, they stormed through a door with a sign above it that flashed, On Air. Dr. Cindy was sitting at a desk with a big microphone hanging from the ceiling above her. She was wearing a pair of headphones and sipping on coffee while she talked to her caller. She looked up in shock when the group barged in, then leaned into her mic.
Folks, I think we need to break for a commercial. We'll be right back with more of the Dr. Cindy Show in just a moment.
The on-air light went dim, and Dr. Cindy took off her headphones.
What's going on? I'm doing a show.
We know what you've been up to, Sabrina said, unconvinced by the woman's dumbfounded expression. We know all about it.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Cindy said.
The magic items, Daphne said. Merlin's wand, the wonder clock, the water from the Fountain of Youth. We know you stole them.
Stole them? I've never stolen anything in my life, Cindy exclaimed.
Relda, I don't know what's going on, but this is incredibly rude, letting your grandchildren come in here and accuse me of being a criminal.
Cindy, I would agree if we didn't have proof. We know you sent your assistants to break into people's homes. They snuck in as mice and then transformed back into men once they found what they were looking for.
But you don't know what you're doing, Uncle Jake added. We know you're trying to combine the items to make some new kind of magic, but it's not working, and you're causing chaos all over town. You have to stop before, well, I don't know before what, but it could be really bad.
Cindy was horrified.
I never sent my assistants anywhere to do any such thing.
Then let's ask them ourselves. Where are they? Mr. Canis said. I know ways of making them admit their guilt.
They're on the roof, Dr. Cindy said. During the broadcast, something went wrong with the transmitter, and they're trying to fix it. My husband Tom is up there supervising the repairs.
Let's go have a conversation with them, then, Granny said.
Cindy stormed past the group in a huff. She led them up a flight of steps and onto the roof. As she threw open the door, the group was blinded by a penetrating blue light. Sabrina had to shield her eyes just to see 2 feet in front of her, but soon her sight adjusted, and what she saw was shocking. Cindy's husband, Tom Baxter, was standing at the base of the radio tower. He was holding an ornate wooden clock in his hands. Malcolm, the producer, stood nearby with what appeared to be a tiny vial of water. Alexander was blasting the vial with a magic wand, causing the rays of energy from the wand to pass through the fluid and onto Tom. Bradford monitored the storm above, shouting information to the others about its size and shape. From the looks of the power coming out of the wand, the energy should have obliterated Tom Baxter, but the magic bounced off the magnificent clock, circling Tom in snake-like blue lights. Behind him was an even more shocking sight. There was an open black hole, like the ones Sabrina had seen in the skies during the other storms. She knew it was a tear in the fabric of time itself. Tom! Cindy shouted. What is going on here?
Tom's face changed from happiness to concern.
Go back downstairs, Cindy. This is very dangerous. It's not safe for you to be up here.
What are you doing, Tom?
The radio host cried. Tom smiled. His yellow eyes lit up when he looked at his young wife.
I'm giving us a future, he said.
It's happening, Malcolm shouted.
Suddenly, there was an immense blast from the wand, and Tom's body was pushed back to the surface of the black hole. He hovered there as the powerful vacuum behind him began to pull things in. At first, it was just a few stray leaves, but Sabrina could feel the energy building. She studied Tom closely, wondering why he wasn't afraid, and then she began to see subtle changes in his appearance. His gray head started to sprout new brown hair.
You have to stop this, Granny yelled.
Don't worry, we've got this under control, Bradford replied.
It'll all be over soon.
Sabrina glanced at the storm swirling above. Mr. Baxter, whatever you're doing has some nasty side effects. It's causing tears in time, she shouted over the noise.
Yes, I know,
Tom yelled, as the pronounced stoop in his posture corrected itself.
I hope they weren't too much of an inconvenience. It took us a while to get the proper devices to build my machine.
What is this? Cindy asked. It's a time machine, and it's too dangerous, Granny said. Tom smiled.
Relda, I didn't build a time machine. I built a clock. A clock that allows me to roll back the years on myself.
Uh-oh, Daphne said, as the magic detector started to shake violently. She pointed to the black hole as it grew nearly 10 times in size. Worse, Sabrina saw something begin to descend from it. Slipping through the surface was a dragon. It huffed and then darted clear out of the blackness, flying into the air with a head-splitting roar.
That was the coolest thing I've ever seen, Puck said as he pulled his little wooden sword from his waist and released his wings. I'm going to kill it.
You're going to get plenty of practice when you get older, Sabrina said as she pulled on his sleeve. Puck frowned at her.
What do you mean by that? I'm an ever after. I don't get older, he said,
though his voice cracked on several of the words. He held his throat in shock. The dragon buzzed the building, leaving a trail of sulfurous fumes in its wake. Sabrina had to dive to get out of the way of its sharp claws and long tail.
Mr. Baxter, you have to stop this. You've already let something out that could kill us all, Uncle Jake shouted. What's next?
Tom shook his head.
It won't be long now, he said,
as his yellow eyes grew bright and clear. The dark spots on his skin faded, and his stringy arms and legs grew lean and muscular. Cindy rushed to him and stood as close as the energy swirling around him would allow.
Why are you doing this?
Because I love you, Doc. I have always loved you, and I always will. But I am only a man, and you are an ever-after. My body is withering away. I've grown too feeble to even take you on a picnic or dance to our wedding song. In no time at all, I would have been gone. You will never die, Cindy. Now, neither will I.
Cindy cried out to him to stop, but her eyes were filled with wonder and possibility.
I love you.
You better, Cinderella, because now you're stuck with me forever, Tom said,
as he stepped down from the black portal. The blue energy that had once enveloped him was gone, as were his wrinkles. He was no longer old. Now he was young, strong, and handsome. He didn't look a day over 25. He took Cindy in his arms and kissed her.
It's over, darling.
But Tom Baxter was wrong. The dragon flying overhead let out an angry roar and a series of flaming assaults. The first one hit the transmitting tower, and it fell over like a child's toy. Its steel girders melted into liquid and poured all over the roof. Everyone scrambled to get out of the way. The next blast from the dragon missed them and hit a parked car on the street below.
Uh-oh,
Daphne said, as the magic detector began to shimmer again.
What? Sabrina asked. Is something else coming through the hole?
Before Daphne could answer, Tom was violently yanked backward to the edge of the black tear. He squirmed to break free, but couldn't. Worse still, the hole began to grow at an alarming rate, along with its gravitational pull. The black tear was no longer satisfied with leaves or loose paper. It was pulling at everything.
Boys, what's going on?
Tom called to his assistants. Malcolm, Alexander, and Bradford stumbled back in fear.
We didn't do this,
Alexander shouted.
Can you pull yourself free?
Cindy said, as she rushed to her husband. He shook his head. She reached up and took his hand, desperately trying to pull him off the hole's edge, but she wasn't strong enough. She even lost a little gold bracelet as it sailed off her wrist and disappeared into the void.
I guess it's not going to let me go, Tom said, forcing a little laugh. Honey,
You might be married to a teenager pretty soon.
Cindy turned to the family.
Do something, she begged.
Uncle Jake was already fumbling through his pockets. He pulled out one trinket after another, examined them, and shoved them back into his jacket.
I don't think I've got anything that can stop this.
Any suggestions? Sabrina asked her grandmother. Granny's handbag was already swinging toward the hole.
Perhaps the three of you should go down to the street, where it is safe.
Ah, I want to see what happens, Puck complained.
The fallen tower began to roll toward the time hole. Canis grabbed Granny and the girls and leaped over it as it rushed toward them like a stampeding rhino. Luckily, Uncle Jake was not in its path, and Puck simply rose into the air to avoid it. A second later, the entire transmitter was sucked into the tear. Unfortunately, as Puck rose off the ground, he found himself trapped in the black hole's gravitational pull. He flapped his wings hard in an effort to escape, but there was nothing for him to grab onto. He drifted closer and closer to the emptiness with nothing to stop him.
We've got a problem, he said.
Sabrina grabbed his foot as he passed, but she too was pulled up.
Help! She yelled.
Daphne latched onto her as well, and soon the three of them were right below the massive hole in time.
Children!
Granny cried, as she held on for dear life to the side of the building. But she was too far away to be of any help, as were Mr. Canis and Uncle Jake, and slowly Puck began to drift into the blackness. His face and upper torso were soon gone, then his waist, and finally his knees. All that was left in this world of the boy fairy was his sneakers, which Sabrina clung to with all her strength.
"I'm losing him!" she cried in desperation. "Puck, you have to fight it!"
Without warning, the hole quadrupled in size, threatening to swallow the entire building. From inside it, something unexpected appeared, an enormous house sitting on top of two grotesque chicken legs. The house pushed the children back through the hole and blocked most of the suction, pulling everything toward the time tear. But it wasn't Baba Yaga inside. Sabrina could see her older self hovering in the window. When the house cleared the horizon of the hole, it planted itself on top of the radio station's roof. The door flew open, and the older Sabrina, Daphne, and Puck ran out. The older Granny Relda wheeled herself out behind them.
"Dear me," Granny said, as she studied the strange visitors.
"You've got to close this hole,"
the older Daphne shouted, as she raced to her younger self. Sabrina studied her. There was something different. She still wore Uncle Jake's coat, but the scar that had once marred her beautiful face was gone.
How?
Daphne asked.
Destroy some machine,
the older Granny Relda shouted over the raging storm. Sabrina raced over to Malcolm, Alexander, and Bradford. They had lost control of the wand, which was floating on its own, and still showering the vial of water and the clock with its power. Sabrina tried to grab it, but there was a shock, and her hand felt like it was on fire.
"Don't touch it, child!" Tom shouted. "If you destroy it, you'll reverse the process!"
Daphne reached for the vial of water with similar results. She cried out, which caused Cindy to look back at the girls. When she saw the pain in Daphne's face, it seemed to open her eyes to the rest of the chaos. Without a word, she picked up the wonder clock, lifted it over her head, and brought it down hard on the ground. It splintered into thousands of pieces. The wand suddenly stopped firing, and the wind disappeared. Tom fell from the surface of the hole as it began to shrink.
"Cindy! Why?" he cried,
though his voice sounded weak and tired.
"I don't need you to be young," she said, as she stepped over to him and caressed his face.
Sabrina could see he was returning to his normal age. His strong arms and legs had returned to feebleness, and his back stooped.
"I did this so we could be together."
Cinderella looked into his eyes.
"Then so be it," she whispered.
And her body began to age as well. Her long blonde hair turned white. Wrinkles weaved across her perfect face, and her delicate hands became gnarled.
"Cindy, no!" Tom cried. "You can't go back. If you age, you won't ever be young again."
"What would life be without you, my prince?" Cindy said, her voice rough and crackling. "When we say our goodbyes, I want to be by your side."
Sabrina's attention turned to the future Puck, who stepped up to the younger one. "Hello, Trickster King," he said. Puck gaped at his older self. "Try to be nicer to Sabrina," the grown-up Puck said with a chuckle. "She's going to be important to you in the future, and trust me, she'll never forgive you for gluing her head to that basketball." Puck grinned. "I never glued her head to a basketball." "You're giving him ideas," the elder Sabrina said reproachfully. Mr. Canis and Granny Relda stepped forward. Granny seemed stunned by her older self, but Canis walked up to her and took her hand.
"It's good to see you, old friend," the older Granny said. "I know what happens. I just don't know when," he said. "You don't have a lot of time left," the old woman said, before breaking into a coughing fit. "How do I stop it?"
"You can't," the future Granny Relda said. "I'm sorry."
"All right, folks, the hole is getting pretty small," the elder Puck said. "If we are going home, we better get going." "Those with me, get back in the house," the future Daphne said. "The rest, get down." Everyone did as they were told. Then the older Daphne fired a wand into the air. It got the attention of the dragon, who made a beeline for the house. The older Daphne turned to little Daphne and smiled.
"There's big things ahead, girl. You're going to have to grow up a little," she said.
"I'll try,"
Daphne called back. Her future self darted into the house with her companions, and the house lumbered back into the black hole. The dragon roared, launched another ball of fire at it, and then disappeared into the abyss as well. A second later, the storm was gone, and the hole in time closed in on itself. Sabrina's 12th birthday was embarrassing. Granny Relda made a big deal out of it, forcing her to wear a funny hat that read, "Birthday Girl." Daphne gave Sabrina her princess tiara. Uncle Jake gave her a new pair of sneakers. Mr. Canis, who was now wearing a bandage on his wounded eye, bought her a little portable radio for her room, and Granny showered her with clothes and a new bicycle. Puck left a box on the kitchen table with her name on it. Inside, she found a basketball and a tube of industrial-strength glue with a note that read, "It's coming when you least expect it." "Where is that freak baby anyway?" Sabrina asked.
"In his room, pouting," Granny Relda said. "He's not at all happy about his current growth spurt."
"Is he sick?" Daphne asked.
"No, he's growing up," Daphne said.
"And if you think he's a pain now, wait until he starts getting pimples," Uncle Jake said. Prince Charming also attended the party, indulging in Granny's German chocolate cake. There was music, laughter, and happiness, which had been in short supply as of late. It seemed as if their recent troubles with taxes, Mayor Hart, and Nottingham would soon be distant memories. There was a knock at the door.
"Who can that be?" Granny said.
"That's Sabrina's birthday present," Charming said. Sabrina was surprised.
"You got me a birthday present?"
"Go answer the door," he said. A million ideas raced through her mind. What could the prince have gotten her? She threw open the door and was a little startled to find a strange woman standing on the porch. She was thin, with brown hair and a pale complexion. Her lips were full and her eyes green. She wore a little black dress, pearls, and high-heeled shoes, and she oozed sophistication. Sabrina knew only one person that was more beautiful than this woman, and that was Snow White.
"Are you Sabrina Grimm?" she asked.
Sabrina nodded. "My name is Bunny Lancaster," she said. "William sent me."
"Okay," Sabrina said, a little dopey. "Are you my present?"
The woman cocked an eyebrow.
I'm not sure what you mean, dear.
Charming appeared at the door.
Bunny, thank you for coming. Please come in.
The woman entered and the family gathered around her.
Mrs. Grimm, this is Bunny Lancaster, Charming said.
I know who she is, the old woman said coolly. Sabrina had never seen her grandmother react that way to anyone. Where was the smile? Where was the sweet hello?
Are you an Everafter?
Daphne asked, rushing to shake the woman's hand. She had her own palm prepped and ready to bite. Bunny nodded.
Which one?
Daphne asked, barely able to contain her excitement. Bunny shifted uncomfortably.
In some circles, I have the rather unfortunate title of the Wicked Queen.
Daphne went for the bite, but then stopped.
You mean the one that tried to kill Snow White?
I didn't try to kill her, Bunny said softly.
Well, Mr. Charming, thank you for the birthday present, but you shouldn't have. Really, you shouldn't have, Sabrina said.
I know this is uncomfortable, but Bunny is here to help you, Charming said.
Help me?
Take me to your mirror, the Wicked Queen replied.
I'm not sure what you mean, Granny stammered.
Mrs. Grimm, I am fully aware that you possess a magic mirror, the woman said impatiently. I also know that Snow voluntarily gave it to your family nearly 100 years ago. I would like to see it.
Granny glanced at Charming, who nodded, as if to say Bunny could be trusted. Then she took out the set of keys from her handbag and led the group upstairs. She unlocked the door to the mirror's room, and everyone stepped inside. When the door closed, the roaring began.
"Who dares invade my sanctuary?"
Mirror's violent face filled the reflection.
"Control yourself," the Wicked Queen said.
"Bunny, is that you?"
Mirror asked. There was a raw silence between the two. They shared an angry and uncomfortable look.
"What a pleasant surprise," Mirror said, forcing a smile to his face.
The Wicked Queen stepped forward.
"Mirror, mirror, can you tell how to break the sleeping spell?"
"Right down to business, Bunny.
Very well. A kiss is all it takes," Mirror said.
"That's not what I asked, servant," the woman said sternly.
Sabrina bristled at the way the woman was talking to her friend. Mirror shifted, obviously taken aback by the queen's rude tone.
"Bunny, I..."
"Mirror! Are you arguing with me?"
"No, I'm..."
"I asked you a question!"
"And I answered it," Mirror said.
"No, you did not. Any fool knows a romantic kiss will break a sleeping spell. Do you think I don't know it? I invented this spell.
I also know that there is always a back door."
"What is the back door?"
"I'm not sure what you mean."
The Wicked Queen's right hand began to glow red. Its intensity was blinding, and heat came off it like the fireballs the dragon had shot at them the night before.
"Mrs. Grimm, your mirror is defective. Allow me to fix it for you."
"Wait! What are you planning on doing?" Sabrina shouted.
"The repairs will not harm the contents, but this sorry excuse for a guardian is damaged. I take great pride in my work, and I should have fixed it a long time ago."
"Bunny, don't do anything you'll regret," Mirror said.
"You pompous, ridiculous little joke," the Wicked Queen said as she placed her red hand on the surface of the mirror.
"It's not like I'm going to kill you. You don't exist. You are a creation, a puppet, a shadow of a person. Your job is to serve your master, and you are failing. When a question is asked, you are to answer it clearly and thoroughly. You need to be repaired."
Mirror cried out in pain.
"Leave him alone!"
Daphne shouted. Angry clouds began to gather around Mirror's head.
"You are not my master.
Every walking and talking person in the world is your master," Bunny said quietly. "I created you.
I know what the rules are. Now, I'm going to ask you again, and this time I want you to give me a thorough answer. Mirror, mirror, can you tell how to break the sleeping spell? Mirror curled his lip and looked embarrassed. Sabrina wasn't happy either. Mirror was her friend, and she didn't like strangers being mean to her friends. She was fully prepared to step between the two of them when the Wicked Queen took her hand off the mirror's reflection, leaving a bright red handprint that quickly faded away. As it disappeared, so did Mirror's face, and another image replaced it. Sitting in a cafe on a cobblestone street was a blonde woman with short, curly hair. She was sipping coffee and writing in a journal as a waiter in black pants and a white apron tried to get her attention. He smiled at her and said something funny, but she seemed to be in her own little world. "There's your answer," the Wicked Queen said. "Who's that?" Daphne asked.
"Goldilocks," Uncle Jake whispered.
"Goldilocks," Granny repeated. "Goldilocks, indeed," Bunny said, eyeing each member of the Grimm family suspiciously. "It seems as if she has found a way out of our happy little town. Lucky, lucky girl." "Bunny, I appreciate the help," Charming said, as he escorted her out of the room.
"Is she the one Dad was in love with before he met Mom?" Sabrina asked.
Granny shuffled her feet.
"Tell her, Mom," Uncle Jake said. "It's her birthday."
"Well, is she the one?"
Granny nodded.
"Yes. Now, let's say goodbye to our guest."
Everyone piled out of the room except Sabrina. Mirror's face appeared in the reflection. He looked as if he had just been in a prize fight.
"Starfish."
"Have you known all along?"
Sabrina said, her voice trembling with anger and hurt. Mirror shook his head.
"No, that's not how it works. I don't know anything."
"Were you keeping it from us?"
She felt like a volcano bubbling over with emotion.
"It's hard to explain, Sabrina. If the question isn't specific, the answers don't come to me. I'm not omnipotent. I'm just a magic mirror, and I do what I was made to do. Ask a question, get an answer. If I had known there were more answers, I would have told you. Bunny forgets that I wasn't one of the deluxe mirrors. I was the first, the test product. She forgets she didn't give me all the bells and whistles she gave the others."
Through her anger, Sabrina could hear the pain in Mirror's voice. It made her feel sorry for him, and her rage faded away.
"It's okay," she said. "There is nothing wrong with you. Don't let her get to you."
Mirror looked as if he might cry. His face faded from the reflection. Sabrina looked down at her mother and father, still slumbering soundly in the queen-size bed in the center of the room.
"Now all we have to do is find Goldilocks," she said.
She joined everyone at the bottom of the stairs. Bunny was saying her farewells, though Granny and Mr. Canis were keeping their distance. She turned and opened the door. Standing on the porch was Snow White. The teacher was so stunned, she dropped a glass carousel she was carrying, cracking it into several pieces.
"Snow," Bunny said.
"Mother,"
Snow replied, as if in shock.
"Mother,"
the girls shouted in unison.
"Billy?"
Ms. White cried when she noticed Prince Charming through the doorway. She looked back and forth at all of them, confused.
"Where have you been?"
"I've been busy," Charming said coolly. Sabrina was shocked at his attitude, but she knew the prince didn't want to see Ms. White. He said he was hiding from her to protect her. Being aloof must be part of the plan.
"I've been worried," Ms. White stammered. "I left messages. I've searched for you."
"Then you're a fool," Charming said. "You think I would want you? You left me at the altar. You humiliated me in front of my family and friends."
"Billy!"
"Go home, Snow. You're embarrassing yourself." Sabrina expected the teacher to turn and run off in tears. But instead, she reached back and socked Charming in the jaw. He stood his ground, but it was obvious he was in pain.
"You sorry excuse for a man," Ms. White said. "How could I have been so blind?"
Then she turned on Granny Relda. "And you! Now you're befriending my mother? I thought we were better friends than that. You of all people know what she has done."
"Snow, I didn't. And you've been hiding Billy here all along while I suffered?"
Granny never got a chance to explain. The lovely woman stormed down the porch steps and raced off in her car before anyone could stop her.
"Well, that's another party I've ruined," Bunny muttered.
She waved her hand over the broken carousel, and it instantly reassembled, looking brand new. She handed it to Sabrina.
"Happy birthday, kid."
Moments later, she got into a beautiful black sports car and sped away. Charming walked across the room, picked up his huge, full-length magic mirror, and carried it outside.
"Where are you going?" Granny Relda said. "You don't have to leave."
"I have things to do, Mrs. Grimm," he said. "And so does your family. You need to make sure Baba Yaga restores her guardians. You must make her understand that she is vulnerable."
"That's not going to be so easy," Uncle Jake said. "When I gave her back the wand, she claimed that my family was now her mortal enemy for lying to her."
"She's moody," Charming said.
"Find a way." Then he turned to the girls. "I have one more present for you, Sabrina. One to share with your sister. It's advice. No matter what the cost, save the ones you love. When you look back on me, remember these words. Remember why I did what I had to do."
He looked over to Mr. Canis, and then back at the girls.
"And get that weapon as soon as you can."
Sabrina was confused. She wanted to ask him what he meant, but he walked down to the street carrying his mirror, and moments later, he was gone.
That night, Sabrina was once again roused from sleep by incessant knocking on the front door. Later, she would wonder why she had answered the door at all. It seemed as if every time she opened it, she got a nasty surprise. But it was late, and no one else in her family seemed to have heard the visitor. How could she have known that Nottingham and Mayor Hart would be on the other side? How could she have known that both of them would have blood-red handprints painted on their chests, the mark of the Scarlet Hand?
"So, you're with them," Sabrina said.
Mayor Hart looked down at the mark.
"It is quite an honor to be able to follow the Master. He has great plans for this world."
Granny and Uncle Jake joined her at the door.
"I've got good news for you, Relda," Hart continued. "We've decided to let you keep your house. For now. I have a feeling we could have raised the tax to $1 billion, and you would still have found a way to pay it. So, congratulations. You are now the last human family in Fairyport Landing. Unfortunately, I have some bad news as well. You see, I tried to be nice and let you leave on your own, but you refused. So now I have to get mean.
Nottingham, arrest Canis."
Nottingham took a pair of handcuffs from his pants pocket.
"Absolutely."
"Your family has hidden behind Canis for decades. He's been the only thing between you and an angry mob on more than one occasion. I suspect that things will get very unpleasant for you if he isn't around."
"It was my idea to break into the jail and free Wilhelm," Granny said. "Arrest me instead."
"Oh, you think we're arresting him for a reason? How funny," Nottingham said with a laugh.
"You can't arrest an innocent person," Sabrina said.
"Fine," Nottingham said. "I'm arresting him for murder."
"Murder?" Sabrina cried.
"The big bad wolf murdered a little girl's grandmother," Nottingham said. "Perhaps you've heard this story?"
"Red Riding Hood," Uncle Jake said.
"Now, where is the old flea bag? If you're hiding him, I'll take you all in."
Mr. Canis appeared at the doorway. "I'll go with you, Nottingham," he said calmly, and stepped out of the house. He had no fear or anger in his face. In fact, he seemed at peace. The sheriff slapped his handcuffs on Canis's huge hands. "You've got the right to remain silent," he started.
"You're just giving up?" Sabrina said to Canis. "You could run off. They'd never catch you."
"We all have our destinies, little one," Canis said. "Perhaps I can save everyone from mine."
"What's going on?"
Daphne said as she came down the stairs. She was still rubbing the sleep from her eyes. Sabrina stepped forward.
"You won't get away with this. We'll stop you just like we've stopped all of the Scarlet Hand. We've got a whole family. There are only two of you."
"I'm afraid I disagree, child," a voice said from behind the mayor and Nottingham.
Sabrina peered into the dark and saw a mob of Everafters stepping onto their lawn. At their forefront was the Beast, followed by the Frog Prince and his wife. Miss Muffet was one of them, as was her husband, the Spider. Tweedledee and Tweedledum were there, accompanied by the Cheshire Cat. There was a sea of ogres, witches, trolls, cyclops, tree gnomes, leprechauns, and dozens of talking animals. There were Everafters Sabrina had seen all over town. Some she had spoken to, others had waited on her at local stores. Glinda the Good Witch stood with them. All had the same red handprint on their chests.
"You look surprised, Grimms. I was hoping you would be," Mayor Hart replied.
"Not surprised," Sabrina said. "Relieved. Now I know which of you are the scum and which aren't."
"Oh, but you haven't met our latest recruit. Allow me to introduce the newest foot soldier in the Scarlet Hand."
The Grimms turned to look.
"I'm sure you'll agree he's just a prince of a guy," Nottingham added, and the crowd erupted into laughter.
And then Prince William Charming stepped to the front of the crowd and stood between Mayor Hart and Nottingham. His shirt was marked with a blood-red handprint. To be continued.
The End. You've been listening to The Sisters Grimm, Book 5, Magic and Other Misdemeanors, by Michael Buckley. Narrated by L.J. Ganser and directed by Dave Millen. This book is copyrighted 2007 by Michael Buckley. This recording is copyrighted 2008 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.